Hello and welcome to The Raptor Show on the Sports Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, please rate and review the program. I'm your host, William Liu. Once again, co-host Blake Murphy. We're thinking of you, Blake. He's at home recovering. He is okay. He is well. He's just tired, as you would be after undergoing, you know, minor surgery. Is it minor or major surgery, Katie Heindel?
What's up? I think it's minor.
Yeah.
Not to downplay what's going on with Blake, you know? Like, it's
right.
You got to take the time to recover.
Yeah.
But I think by now it's minor. Is it?
I hope so.
Like a little laser and then they just
pop
that thing out?
A term, I think laparoscopic.
Yeah, where laparoscopic. It was
like, he's like, they made four little incisions, removed my appendix, and sent me home the same day.
Yeah.
So, Blake, we're thinking of you, buddy. I know Blake is making his very best effort to return to the Raptor Show. You know, he might even return to the Raptor Show sooner than some Raptors on the team. But ultimately, Blake, I hope you're doing okay, and I hope you had a good weekend. Katie Heindel, writer at large, basketball feelings,
Hi.
Inventor, hat wearer. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Not a lot of people would say yes to co-hosting a Raptor show.
You know, I didn't.
These days.
No, I would be the co-host.
Oh,
no. Until it clicked for me a little earlier today, but then I was like, that's fine. We can just chat.
No, I mean, it's co-host. Like, we're talking about Raptors. And we will talk about this thrilling 128-118 overtime loss to Portland over the weekend. And of course, we'll go away from that and actually talk about, quite frankly, the things I wanted to talk about, your latest basketball feelings column. But yeah, it's chill. So this is what we're going to do today. You and I are going to talk from 2 to 3. Then I'm going to go to break. I'm going to go call David Thorpe, friend of the program. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to talk real hoops to be honest, teams that are not the Raptors. And then we'll circle back, and I'll give a general take on the team and look ahead to tonight's riveting matchup against the Denver Nuggets. By the way, if you haven't heard the news already, Gary Trent's questionable.
I did.
Emmanuel Quickley's questionable.
Your excellent producer told me that.
Yeah. RJ's probable, so that's nice.
That is nice.
Boucher's questionable.
Yeah, it's a bit like a revolving door at this point, you know?
Right.
But I think it's nice. Like, people complain, oh, what are we going to talk about? We talk about the Raptors. This is what we talk about. They're keeping us on our toes.
Right. A lot of Javon Freeman Liberty talk tomorrow's show, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Katie, the Raptors lost over the weekend to Portland. They fought hard. They played hard. Mm. They came out to a slow start, but they forced overtime. Unfortunately, in overtime, they couldn't score, like, at all, and Portland pulled away. But what was your Saturday night 10 p.m. viewing experience of the Raptors like?
I mean, I will be completely honest with you. This was a rewatch for me.
Nice. Yes. Nice.
I'm a notorious not live West Coast game watcher. I like to sleep, people. And it was a spring ahead weekend. So it's like I knew I needed that. Mm-hmm. I knew I had to make up for that hour somewhere. So I thought this felt safe. But on the rewatch, I think you've talked about this before. Like, it was not the worst loss that could have happened.
Okay.
It wasn't a worst point differential since 1996 style loss.
That was earlier last.
Yeah, that was just, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Roller coaster of a week last.
For sure,
week. Yeah. I mean, it felt like these are the kinds of losses, injuries aside, we've been talking about getting more comfortable with the team having this season, because in every loss, there's going to be some kind of incremental gain. There's going to be some kind of incremental knowledge, right? I mean, personally, I was most excited to see Chris Boucher, play such a big role and, be such a difference maker. Because I, frankly, have kind of been missing him, around the floor. So that was cool. Otherwise, I don't know, like the Scoot Quickly trash talk.
Yeah, I didn't understand. Maybe on the rewatch it was more clear. But
no, it wasn't.
Watching it live, I didn't quite understand what they had going at each other for. Like, you know what I mean? Because you saw Quickly hit the too small on him after hitting a turnaround jumper. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you hit a turnaround jumper on a guy, it's not the same time to hit it too small. I feel like if you dunk on a guy or through contact at the rim, it's like you're literally too small.
Yeah.
But a turnaround jumper, you're fading away from the contact and then saying too small.
I'm of the mind that, take it if this is empowering to the team right now, they could take it. And I don't know. I mean, I don't mind seeing a little bit of trash talk back and forth, kind of fired up and competitive, especially with, I think, the responsibility that Quickly has been asked to take on. and like the role he's playing with the team now, I also think like Portland feels like a team that's also frustrated and, you know, down bad. I think what I actually, I'll go back and say what I like most about this game is these are two teams that in a way, and weirdly always eerily are, they have like their parallels and similarities, sometimes annoyingly so. I think at this point they're also in a frustrated spot where the Blazers, I think, thought they would be much better than they are right now. They're not. And I think Toronto thought they'd be a little bit more far along in the development of this young team. So it was kind of like a frustration off.
There was a lot of frustration in the game.
Between the two of them? Yeah.
Like there was, it was quite spicy and heated in the game in a way that I wasn't expecting for 10 p.m. in Portland on a Saturday. Maybe it was the fans in attendance. It was a lot of Toronto fans.
Raptors fans.
Which is always something I enjoyed. I didn't enjoy the fact that they got to see one of the worst first quarters. 33-16, Raptors lost the first quarter.
That's
and
rough.
Sometimes I know it's a really bad game because I stopped taking like notes on like, okay, they ran this play or they're in this coverage with this lineup. And the notes are just like, Ochai's first shot, baseline drive, tries very ambitious reverse layup and he misses it. And then Delano Banton goes end-to-end and gets fouled. Or Gary Trent takes a very bad pull-up three. Then on the next possession, 2-1 fast break, tries a windmill layup rather than try giving it off to Ochai.
That was That was tough.
Yeah. And it keeps like, going though.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's okay.
This is great.
Raptors start 1-13 from the field. Grady keeps missing open shots. And then Blazers surprise the Raptors with the zone. Gary dribbles in one spot for 10 seconds before launching up a pull up three that hits all glass. So
It was the wrong kind of revenge. I mean, I guess Gary has Gary had a good revenge game against Portland? I wonder.
The Raptors have beaten Portland over the years, but I rarely felt like it was Gary who like was the driving catalyst behind those wins specifically. I do remember the first one where right after he got traded for Norm, it just so happened that Portland's next game was against Toronto. So Norm came back to Toronto instantly. I guess it was in Tampa, and Gary played against Norm in that one. But, I mean, they were both role players at the time, and it didn't really, like, shape the result.
Yeah. I always feel a little bit sad when it's like the moment to have like, if not a full revenge game, just like a nice revenge shot, like a dagger like that.
Yeah.
And then it's just like boing, like off the off the glass. It's never, I can't feel like too confidence forming.
No, but I thought Gary like settled in a little bit better afterwards. Yeah. He did take 26 shots, only took one free throw and 3 assists, but I'm here for like whatever they have to give, and I think that that's where I'm happy you brought up Chris and quickly, because those are the two guys I wanted to talk about.
I will just say first on the Ochai layout, I like that he's getting more comfortable with this kind of in-game awareness, but I will say that sort of spatial awareness, I was a bit surprised.
Yeah,
or where he started from.
Certainly, I think he's really, I think he was playing a very much more specific role, I guess, the last couple of years in Utah, and now he's in this situation, and it's like, oh, I guess I can take this shot, and I'm not coming out the game. And that's how you get certain games where it's like he'll get a little bit overambitious. But you're seeing that across the board from everybody, so I'm not trying to single him out for that. Let's start with Boucher, because I feel like Boucher
It's been great to see him again.
It was the week of Chris Boucher last week.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's tweeting about Chris. Everybody was chanting about Chris. You know, it's not – of course, people, I've seen the other reaction of like, why do we have to talk about Chris this much? He's not that important, or like he's older and the Raptors are moving younger and so they're moving away from him. I do think on a personal level, and I always appreciated this about Chris, he's pretty good at communicating what he's feeling and sort of being open about that to the audience. It was even better when he had a podcast, but that's a secondary thing. He was asked post-game after the loss to Portland, how he's dealt with this emotionally, and this is what Chris said, quote, "If you get to know me, you know I don't stay mad for too long. If I'm mad about something, it's either my performance or knowing that I can do better. It's the same old thing. My emotions drive me, but it can kill me, and I always have that passion to just play hard. At the end of the day, it's the only thing I know." Katie, I feel like this is like, it's perfect for you.
I like that.
Yeah.
He's metabolizing his emotions quickly or like in a, it sounds like in a healthy way, you know, like letting himself go through the cycle of feeling his feelings, not repressing them, but like bouncing back and learning from them. I will say on the note of why do we have to talk about, like, I haven't seen that going around, but I trust you that people are saying, why do we have to talk about Chris Boucher? What else would we talk about? right now, I will offer. And genuinely,
yeah.
I am of the mind, and like, I don't know, this doesn't seem to sit well with this team this year, especially when I think of like Pascal and Scotty discourse. But like, why does it have to be either or?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still think there is space for Chris Boucher on this team. Mm-hmm. I know they're a much younger team. Yeah, maybe his physical capabilities are like, you know, his frame fits a previous iteration of this team when we were like 6'9" and everybody's long and kind of spry and, you know, explosive. But you've seen what can happen when he comes into a game and sort of prompts and prods it along and is and like does bring that, like, I don't know, just, I'm not gonna say je ne sais quoi, but like, there's like a freneticism, I think, is what it is. It's like you never really know what he's going to do or where he's going to move, and he can really destabilize a team. And I think when the Raptors are lagging or especially like falling behind in their scoring, it's very helpful to have somebody like that on the floor.
Well, I mean, I think those are the moments you appreciate Chris the most.
Yeah.
Like, this was actually set up to be the perfect Chris Boucher game where they're lagging, you didn't expect him to play, he comes in and gives you the energy, the signature moments, and it actually pushes you ahead. I mean, even to force overtime, he got fouled on a putback, made both free throws to cut it to a 2-point lead. Then he pressured Simons on the sideline, got Simons to throw it off of Chris, but then it bounced right off of Simons. Mm-hmm. Somehow the official called it as like, oh, it's off of Chris. Ultimately, they decided to jump ball. He wins the jump ball, and then the Raptors miss two shots, and it's Chris Boucher who ultimately taps it back in for the chance to even play overtime. So it was actually set up to be the exact type of game, because that is the lagging, right? Like, when the Raptors are lagging, that's when Chris has had his moments. I also do feel like, you know, I think you could definitely talk about the fact that the Raptors have changed direction this year and that lots of people get caught up in, you know, the churn when a company at large decides to move in a different direction. But I don't know. I mean, especially when I saw the stat that the Raptors have played 28 different players this year, it's just like, I think sometimes in the moment when you're doing the show day to day, I'm thinking about like, okay, this is why they did it. This is why they're moving on. We process and we just move on. I don't think I've really sat with the idea that like, there's been so much human churn on this roster. And I feel like for Chris, he's just kind of been almost discarded in that way. And I totally understand the direction, but that's why I appreciate hearing from his perspective. And I was actually really rooting for him to play well because it's, even though you are being pivoted away from, it doesn't mean that you are less valuable. And I feel like for sure for players, it must be really difficult to maintain that feeling.
Absolutely. I think there was also more clarity last night when Darko was asked that like, why hasn't Chris Boucher been playing as much?
Mm-hmm.
And when he said, it's because he wants to just play him at the five.
Okay.
Right? So it's like, now you've got like, I mean, you do have injuries, but it's like, that's not somewhere where he has been kind of placed statically before. Like it was he was always fluid, right? Like he wasn't necessarily being asked to stay there. And I think when you do look at this roster and like the health, when they do get healthy and who's actually in that position, it does make sense why Boucher might not be the first option in that sense.
No, for sure.
Just to go back to what I was saying earlier of like, why does it have to be one or the other? I don't think it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But no, like to your point about discarding people, I think it is worthwhile too. And I think also because, and I know we'll get to this later, but this like sense of NBA time, like how warped and accelerated it makes things.
For sure, yeah.
To take a moment to pause, it's not the worst to look back and be like, oh yeah, how many teams were the Toronto Raptors this season?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I can count at least four.
We had the team we started the season off with, the strange team that we had post-OG trade, which was actually playing good basketball for a while.
They were.
For like 2 weeks, and then Jakob got hurt, derailed the rest of their season. Then the Pascal trade, which felt inevitable, happened. Then there was a new trade, a new team of like, okay, that team. And then they've had a bunch of injuries since then, and now we have whatever this is right now.
Yeah, revolving door team.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And the Chris Boucher renaissance, so I don't mind that. Generally, like, it obviously we have dashed our hopes of any play-in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a nice feel. Like, even to think, like, oh, yeah, that was something we believed for a week.
That was maybe a rallying 3 weeks ago. Week. Yeah.
But, like, that's the way this team has been. And I know that can be a bit jarring or maybe give you kind of whiplash as a fan and trying to follow this team and be prescriptive about what it is you think they need. I think at this point, the safest thing to say is, like, they need everybody to get healthy, and they need to just try and finish the season as strongly as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And, like, learn as much and take these kind of cues into next season. I don't mean, like, it's a write-off.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's, like, a heavy tank mentality.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm
that's
there.
That's out of their hands at this point. Like,
yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
They're going to lose most games regardless.
Yeah, but it's like, how are they going to lose
those games,
you know? And I think those will give better clues, even in terms of, like, what's their frustration level?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to be able to bounce back? Like, you do need wins to remain optimistic mm-hmm. in the NBA, especially when you're a young team that's struggling. So, like, how are they going to find the silver linings in the losses?
Mm-hmm.
Or how are they going to test? And honestly, maybe just, like, have fun with some of these contenders that they've got to face.
Yeah.
Like, be brats. Be pests.
Yeah, right.
Like, be that team to close out the season.
Give them a bit of a scare. Be up, like, 7 points in the third quarter, and then let the other team crush you like they should.
They probably will come back to crush you because they're like, we can't let these guys beat us, but, like, you know, test them.
And that's, I think, for me, like, it's so easy at this point in the season because of all the changes and because of all the unfortunate circumstances that have mm-hmm. happened to just, like, go into games and go with the approach of, like, let's get it over with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think for a lot of people, it's like, it is a bit of a chore to find the group. And that's why I really appreciate that, especially in that backdrop, that, like, a guy like Chris can come in and just find a reason to play hard. And, of course, Chris has his own redemption thing. He has his own career to worry about. And, of course, you would want all athletes at all times to be like, oh, I'm fired up and I'm ready to go. You know what I mean? Like, this is everything for me. Yeah. Raptors Portland, game 65 of the season. Who's counting? And that's where I feel like for Chris, like, you know, he found that and he gave that injection of energy and reason to the game. And that's why it was entertaining until I guess they lost in overtime, but mm-hmm. that wasn't really his fault. And I think for him too, it's just the personal thing, because he also talked about his understanding and his relationship with Darko, mm-hmm. who has ultimately chosen to pivot away from him the entire season. Chris said, quote, we talk, me and Darko, all this. He knows me and knows what I can bring. Sometimes things don't go all the way you want. The team's had a lot of changes and I got caught in the middle. And I know that they know what I'm able to do. And everyone knows that I can change the game and all. I don't think that anyone thinks I can't play. It's more, it's about more than me, which I think for him, it's good perspective, because, you know, you do have to maintain that confidence. And I'm happy he showed his worth to potentially other teams that probably will play on next year. Quickly is going to be here long term.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has been a joy to watch Quickly. And since the All-Star break in particular, he's averaging 22 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists per game, shooting 46% from the field, 43% from three while taking like 9 a game. And, you know, I'm enjoying all the moments where he's like taking this team by the collar and just trying to drag them ahead. And they're not dragging them to victories, but the practice of taking that sort of initiative and control and trying to impart his personality onto the team, I think that is growth in the long term,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what have you liked from Quickly so far?
Like, exactly that. I think that he was asked to step into this role. And I don't think he would have expected to step into the role he has as fast as he has, because obviously this has been because of absences.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at how he was playing with the Knicks and now how he's being asked to play with the Raptors, it's just being handed, like, a ton of responsibility.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean in the sense of more minutes. It's just like, okay, you're the one that when the game is lagging, when guys are getting frustrated, when shots are, like, bouncing off the backboard for no reason, it just, and, like, these are, like, kind of the automatic shots that should be falling, and there needs to be a spark. Now people are looking to you to create that spark. And I think you've seen these real-time moments of realization. I think you talked about this last week, like, where it seems like he clues into that mm-hmm. in the game. He looks around. He's like, it's me, you know? And
yeah.
I've talked to a lot of guys in the NBA about this who kind of have this transition where it's like, the way it looks from the outside is like, oh yeah, they just know, you know, mm-hmm. and they just switch. But it's like, no, there's always a moment of realization, whether they're looking around a locker room,
yeah.
they're looking around the floor, or they're like, who's the vet? Like, who should be telling me, like, where to be right now, or you know, what we should be doing? And then they realize, like, wait a second.
If no one's telling
it's me.
It's up to
yeah.
me. Yeah.
And to notice, like, wait, everybody's looking to me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think that's fantastic. I think he's really shouldered that well. And like you said, he doesn't really seem like he's someone who's very comfortable with just losing. If he's going to lose, it's going to be a competitive loss. It's going to be like an OT kind of loss.
Yeah, right.
It's he's trying to gain, he's trying to like squeeze all the juice out of these losses, which is again, like what you want to see. But I really like him. I there's like endless puns, but like I do really like his speed. Like I feel like that is something that I've kind of missed desperately in the way that the Raptors have played. And, and I think he really brings that back. And I like how he plays with RJ. It actually was really cool to see how he played with Boucher. I think the two of them like were vibing really well together on the
floor. They knew when it was a pick and pop, when it was a pick and roll. When Boucher was screening to get quickly a mismatch so he can blow by DeAndre Ayton. They worked really well together for two guys who literally never played together.
Which I think, you know, goes to show Quickly's just like general IQ and I think comfort and sense on the floor. So generally, like, I think it's all been positives. And I think honestly, any of the kind of blunders or places where he was like a little bit behind the action or maybe ahead of the action, I could see those smoothing themselves out, you know, by like way beyond this time next season.
I mean, first and foremost, I like this level of engagement. Because again, you could easily go into this and like, this team is here to just because they're scheduled to be here. We're here with a lot of guys that I don't know, and let's just get this thing over with. And we've seen players be passengers throughout these kind of games and get lost in this sort of shuffle. I think for Quickly, like, not one game have I watched him, especially since the injuries have happened, where he's like, I'm just here to, like, pass the time. Like, he's giving it his all every single time and trying to make the right plays. There's obviously going to be lots of things that stumble upon him. Like, I don't think he's been blitzed as much as he's been recently, though he's been doubled. I get he's number one item on the scouting report. He's not playing tonight, by the way. This is tough.
Did see that.
But you know, like, ultimately this is a it's valuable an experience for him. And I think my hope is just he feels and he can take the same approach when everyone's healthy again, when they have like their regular roster back. Because one of the questions I had for just even in seeing Quickly for the first time as a Raptor was just how is he going to look as one of the main players? Is he going to take on the leadership aspect of it too? And that's why I really like the fact that he wants to trash talk with Scoot Henderson. But he's also not forcing a shot against him. You know what I mean? He's not trash talking, I'm going to shoot whatever shot. Like, he's going to go at him, be aggressive, but still pick his right spots. And I think especially for a point guard, it's so important to be able to read and feel the emotion of the game. Something I felt like Kyle and Fred did well.
Absolutely.
Fred probably last year probably overdid it.
Yeah.
But I understand why he overdid it. Like, everyone was very overwhelmed last year. For a younger point guard like Quickly, what is his temperament? And I like his temperament a lot. And, yeah, you know, I just hope he can do this with Scotty and with RJ all together eventually. Hopefully that one day. That's what we should have been watching the second half of the season. Let's be honest. Like, you know.
No, I know. And we saw, like, we did get to see flashes of that earlier on, like right after the trade. And I did, you know, it was really promising. I really like the point you made about being able to take the like a temperature check of a team. I think someone like Kyle Lowry was almost like, it was like sixth sense to him. Like,
yeah,
it was like real second nature. Quickly is obviously a lot younger and like this is kind of his first shake at being asked to have that role. But again, I think we're talking about picking the team up kind of by the collar and dragging them along. He does seem to know what they need when they need it. So like, that's really cool to see. It is cool. I think, we might have talked about this last time I was on, but like, you don't get to see these arcs in real time as much. I feel like in the NBA, we will like often look back and be like, oh yeah, now this person can do this. It's, and you don't really notice that stuff when a team is really winning because you're focusing on them winning and all the positives. But it is cool to be able to see someone grow into these skills like in real time a little bit. Like, I'm really reaching for the silver lining here, but I do think,
that's the new caption of the show.
Yeah.
It's a new headline. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. I'm really reaching
for the silver
lining. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the only other question I had for you, Katie, before we break and talk about your piece was, who or what are you watching the Raptors for?
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's so
blunt of a question.
For the thrill of it.
I could have phrased that better.
Who or what?
Yeah.
I mean,
like tonight, for example, against the Nuggets, the reigning champions.
Tonight, I think I would be looking for what I said earlier of like, can you be a pest to this team?
Okay. Yeah.
Jokic, I think, is immune to pestering.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, just exists in a space and time above everybody else. But I think you can get under Jamal Murray's skin. You know, I think you can get under Michael Porter Jr.'s skin. Like, I think there's, like, little entry points. I would normally say if this team was, like, on a was healthy and kind of on the trajectory to where they'll be last season, this would be like a good barometer matchup of like playing up, you know, like,
yeah.
And the Raptors do, I think it is in their DNA a little bit. Mm-hmm. They do historically play better when they're playing up than when they're playing a team that's
I agree.
Like, yeah. matched to them or just a little bit below them. So, you know, take that opportunity with tonight. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of looking at what Bruce Brown's going to wear.
Yeah.
Homecoming.
I was hoping that this was going to be his ring ceremony, but I guess he already did it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he already did it with the Pacers. Like 3 games before he got traded.
Like, I forgot about that.
Right.
Bruce Brown was a Pacer for a big chunk of this season.
Yeah, that was weird. It's been a weird year for everybody.
It has. I think, again, I would just look to, like, the continuity of chemistry that we're talking about mm-hmm. and the way that this team is going to build and grow going forward. And, like, I don't think this would have to be a blowout loss. I really don't. Like, if they can kind of keep this close, I'm looking at that. Was that enough things to be looking for?
That is the hope, yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping they stick around. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of those TV characters, and it's like one of those reality TV characters. You're like, they're not going to win Big Brother. But I kind of like them for the challenges.
Yeah.
You know, they start messes in the house. I know they're going to get voted out, but like, let's just see how long it goes for.
Yeah,
you know?
No.
That's the Raptors right now, going to every game. Like, let's just not get kicked out of the house first. Let's be like, let's get kicked out like 5 players.
Yeah, we're not going to win the big cash prize, but like,
yes.
we can extend our like 15 minutes of fame.
Let's have moments.
Let's try that.
Let's have actual little bits of moments. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, I mean, I would love to see... Honestly, like, I would love to see, first off, which 8 players are available tonight.
True.
I did jokingly tweet that Grange will be the backup center tonight. I think
he could be.
Apparently, Grange got a decent shot.
He's got, like, we've seen him. He's, like, got some stoicism. I don't think he would be too rattled, you know, around the rim.
I guess so, yeah.
I don't know if
he's going to be able to post up or if he's going to hold up against Jokic in the post, but... You know, the fact that we even have to entertain these kind of questions. I guess actually the last thing I was going to ask about is Kelly. I guess Kelly's the other guy who played that, you know, for sure will be here long term and stuff like that too. I feel like when I watch Kelly, I'm seeing a guy who's trying to do the right things at all time and realizing in real time that that's not enough.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like,
enough for this team.
Yeah, yeah, for this, especially for this circumstance. He's
right.
Like, oh, like, my instincts would be to set up this guy here. Or, like, I'm going to, you know, push the pace here and create a mismatch here, and then I'm going to get off the ball. Mm-hmm. And then I think midway through games, he's like, yeah, I can't do that, man. I'm going to need to score this myself. Or, like, I'm going to need to hit this shot. Like, I'm going to need to be super aggressive instead of looking to pass.
Yeah.
And I know it's out of character for Kelly, but I do appreciate that he's like, I'm trying my best here. You're starting me at center. And, you know, that's not always going to go well for me, but... I don't know what your thoughts on Kelly.
No, I think like that's really funny because it with someone like him, you obviously have the veteran. I don't mean like going through the motions in the sense that he's phoning it in by any means.
Yeah, for sure.
But when you've played that long for that many teams, like you do have a really good sense of where you should be, what the actions are going to be, how you're going to best impact the game. But when you look around, you're like, wait a second, like I don't have these very basic.
Right.
Components.
I'm dribbling handoff to Grady Hick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it is not going to work.
Yeah.
It is interesting to see the recalibration again in real time of someone like that with his experience and just like tenure in the league.
Yeah.
Honestly, just be learning on the fly again.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I think he's totally up for it.
He's very engaged. He's very involved. Like, I think, you know, like, even defensively, even though he gets like, if he has to move or jump or box guys out, those things are not good for him, but he's like surprisingly disruptive. He's blocking shots.
Keeps cool, I feel like.
He's
got a pretty good, like, you know, I feel like there's like a BC person joke to be made in there.
Maybe.
But like,
he's chill.
He's chill. He's a chiller. And you are seeing that on the floor, which again, I think is great alongside someone like Quickly, bring Boucher back in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need some anchors for all these other weird actions the team is going to run and all the, like, you know, who's going to even be playing tonight. Is Kelly Olynyk even available tonight or is he
Oh, hurt? My goodness. I hope so. I think he is. We're going to throw him to the Wolves against the Nikola Jokic tonight. So
yeah, he's going to get – he might get a little bit battered.
Look, I just hope
he'll be okay.
We don't put too much on Kelly before the Olympics this summer, but there's plenty of time, and I'm really enjoying that Kelly's bringing his very best to the situation.
He is,
and there is such a weirdness to his game that, like, he'll just slow and pause at certain moments, and I'm like, but you're mid drive, I don't see guys pausing mid-drive.
He's disruptive.
But he does that, you know? And
he's disruptive.
Yeah. Because you don't usually, exactly, you don't see 32-year-olds, like, typically try to expand their game. They're very much like, I know what keeps me employed. I'm going to do those things and be very specific, especially with the older you get, the more specific. Mm-hmm. And in this situation, Kelly's like, nah, I guess I have to do a lot more. And, yeah, those are the reasons to watch the Raptors. Anyway, we're going to take a break, thankfully, get off this topic. I've been your host, Walu. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wimloo. Continue to be joined by Katie Heindel, who, if you're not already doing this, make sure you go subscribe to Katie's Substack, Basketball Feelings. The last one I saw in the inbox, I was like, oh, Katie wrote, this is wonderful. And I was chilling. It's you have to chill on the Sunday where the clocks, I guess, move forward because you're losing an hour.
You
so you're always waking up at like 10 and you're like, this is not normal. I don't usually wake up at 10 a.m. But because the clocks changed and you no one wants an hour out of their Sunday, mm-hmm. You just sort of take it easy on yourself. So I'm like, oh, this is great. This is perfect for this kind of day. And I'm like, okay, Katie wrote, this is awesome. I'm going to click the link and send my email. And I'm reading and I'm reading and I'm like, wow, this has made me feel very appreciative of the fact that we get to do this job in covering sports, but also made me realize, like, okay, if you really take a pause and you look around, like the job that we signed up for, I guess when we first started doing this, kind of no longer exists across the board. So we're going to pivot to that conversation off the conversation of why you should watch the Raptors. Please, because there's a comma and please afterwards. But this is sports, comma, but make it content. So Katie, tell us about why you wrote this piece and if anything specifically spurred you to sort of go in this direction.
I think this one, well, I will say like some Basketball Feelings entries. Never sure what to call the newsletter, like emails, posts, entries, pieces, but some of them.
Okay. It's an essay. This is certainly an essay.
But some come to mind because I'm reacting. Some are very reactionary, or it's like something happened and it does really spark the need to just sit down and write about it. It's how I best process things. This one, I will say, was mostly a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
I think looking at the general degradation of not just the sports media industry that you and I work in, but in generally journalism and media, whether that's print, digital, a hybrid of the two, a general degradation and erosion, if not outright loss, of how things have looked. I'm going to say 10 years, but it's probably 5, if not less than 5.
It's definitely accelerated post-pandemic.
And just losing so many spaces and mm-hmm. in losing those spaces, losing the voices of the people that write there. And a thing that for me, like when we talk about this ad nauseum, and I feel like sometimes people don't understand the impacts of it, but that's what made me want to sit down and write this because I was like, well, what actually are the mm-hmm. impacts of it? Like I got into sports writing in a really roundabout way, but I did it through the writers and the voices in the space that I admired mm-hmm. who were doing things a little bit differently and had the freedom to do things differently. But I like that because I've always looked to writers and artists to kind of translate cultural experiences, whether that's like in the moment of the moment, or retrospectively, you know, and I think everyone does this. Like that's why you gravitate towards certain writers or artists to begin with, mm-hmm. because they spark something in you and they're sort of a prism of how you see the world. But like a nice side effect of that is these people also kind of chronicle our history, right?
Yes.
Like you can look back at things that happened 5, 10, way more years ago because you have people that wrote about them, talked about them, you know, made work about them.
Mm-hmm.
What made me stop is like, yeah, we're talking a lot about what we've lost and what we don't have anymore. But like, what are actually what's the deeper fallout of that? You know what I mean? Like are we going to look back at this time and then actually just have huge gaps that we can't account for, because we've lost so many people, whether they're losing jobs in the industry or they're leaving for other, you know, more sustainable work, you're not just losing people, like you're losing this sense of record keeping, you know, and like a deeper cultural level, like what are the effects of that? And I know the newsletter's about basketball. So in some ways it's not at all really about basketball, but in some ways it absolutely is, because this is something that's so far reaching and goes beyond, you know, what you and I do and our colleagues do. It's something that I think more people should maybe take notice of, because I think you can be ignorant of it up to a point. But when you look at like culturally what the huge gaps are going to be that we have, mm-hmm. when you lose all these people, that's, I think, a bit more worrying, because that's literally history.
Yeah. Well, you know, okay, so I know for me, the reason I wanted to even go into doing this, and I think I actually wanted to go in as a writer, but then podcasts became more popular and I kind of adjusted towards, I guess, what the market forces were dictating, you know, so I pivoted in this direction. Of course, I'm very fortunate to be able to do this. But the reason I went into this is because I really, really enjoyed, like, sports writing, I guess, not just the reporting around it, although sometimes that can be quite important, but the sort of presentation, the way these perspectives were, you know, presented, like, as you mentioned, the prism thing. And I think now so much about another person maybe walking into, you know, I guess a job search and thinking about what do they like, what do they enjoy. And I feel like there's absolutely much, much less of sports writing and of content. And I guess maybe the volume actually is still quite high, but the actual substance of it is quite low. Like this is something that I sat down, I thought about, of like the question of what still works in sports media.
Yeah.
And these were the answers that I came up with. And I want you to tell me if I'm missing one, or maybe your thoughts on this too. But what works in sports media right now? Sport betting content. And particularly, it doesn't have to be specifically talking about this is the line, this is how you should bet, you know, these kind of things. But the idea that anything that converts a fan towards being a betting user, is probably the most valuable thing in sports media right now, the hierarchy. The next one that I had was fact-finding reporting that can be aggregated. So Shams, Woj, reporters. You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. People who break news, or even people who deal with the news firsthand and not necessarily bring you a tweet like Woj, maybe like Grange, for example, is on the road right now, might write a whole story, and there might be some nuggets in there that people will pull out and be aggregated. But fact-finding, aggregation, and reporting is number one to me. If you can't do either of those things, you probably need to have the ability to aggregate and pump out a high volume so that your, I guess, your labor is maybe more, you could more scalable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I think fourth on this list that I found, which is the one I enjoy, and I think that this is something you sit in as well, just creating a community where you're able to obviously help shape and dictate, almost like a moderator in a way. Sometimes you're a presenter and a host in my specific case, where I guess sort of like-minded people and created kind of space can sort of help build. And that community ultimately is what sustains you. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I had was legacy brand content, which is like whether you're a big writer or big publication, you can just continue to sit on that. Mm-hmm. But those are the five that I had kind of in order of what's most like financially valuable. Mm-hmm. And it made me really sad to think about those five. But yeah, when you hear that, and especially within the scope of your piece, like, is that how you see the industry right now as well?
Yeah, and I think, like, what you nail is also what's maybe the bleakest about it is we might have, even 5-10 years ago, reversed that list, where it's like, you know, these legacy publications seemed the ones that were untouchable because they had all this history behind them. They were employing, like, these kind of titans of industry, right? And it's where people look to, not just for their news, but, like, to, like, learn interesting stories about people that they root for and care about. You know, like, but now this inversion of we've seen what happened at SI, you know? Like, we've seen what happened at so many other legacy publications that I feel like those are no longer untouchable.
Yeah.
If anything, we're watching those crumble. And then everything up the kind of pyramid that you laid out, like, is indicative of, I think, the, I guess I'm going to call it a problem, but I also waffle because It's just the reality.
Yeah, sure.
Most jobs are coming out of, like, whether you want to be a writer or a broadcaster, as we've said, like, you kind of have to do everything. You've got to be a hybrid.
Yeah.
You're going to work for a sports betting site because that's actually where the jobs are coming from.
Those sites
are who are hiring, you know, especially, like, newcomers in the industry. The aggregation thing is really interesting, and, like, that's also what kind of sparked me wanting to write this is because everything has to be content now.
Yes.
This is the nature. And, again, this is something where it's, like, I'm not going to sit here and sound, like, ancient and blame TikTok and social media.
Okay.
Because, again, I think those are – but those these are forms that have come out of a wider, like, whether you want to call it, like, socioeconomic or just, like, the times we live in, like – those haven't caused it. They have certainly accelerated things.
Sure.
You know, but they exist in the times we live in. But yeah, everything has to be, even when you, I forget what your second point was, but when you talked about, like, aggregation.
Fact-finding reporting, that can be aggregated.
That can be aggregated. Yeah. But it's like.
It's not even to find the story.
Yeah.
It's so that it's it, like, can, other people can, the minnows can eat it.
Spin off, you know, what is the SEO kind of reach?
Yeah.
Like, how many, you know, is this something that's going to get, like, quote tweeted into oblivion and then we'll just, like, you know, get so many more impressions? Like, everything that's being created feels like it's being created because it's like, how, what will the reach of this be? And how long will this be able to be aggregated? I guess the irony is that nothing gets aggregated more than 24 hours within this cycle. So again, that's something I think of when it's like, well, where are we creating space or pauses for ourselves to maybe sit with a story, sit with information, you know, and actually learn about it or realize, like, we don't have to have, we have to have a take. I think.
Sure, yeah.
We are prompted to always want to have a take.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't ever always need to have a take about everything, and I think the takeification hasn't really helped, but I do want to go back to something you talked about of just, like, labor and kind of art, because, again, I think there's something to be said for the our relationship, our collective, like, societal now relationship of how we view art and labor and, like, what is deemed worthwhile now is mostly because of what's profitable. We see this a lot, like,
for sure,
you know, we see this directly with sports betting, and there's way more to talk about with sports betting in terms of, like, the fallout we're seeing with athletes, like Rudy Gobert getting fined $100,000 for making, like,
the
a
money gesture,
and Draymond Green getting, what, like, 25, a fine for, like, 25K for dragon.
Gobert, that's right.
There's, like,
he fully got choked.
That's a huge, but, like, that's a huge discrepancy in fines,
for sure.
Right? And, like, you know, there, I think there are worthwhile questions to ask there. But generally, like, things aren't seen as worthwhile anymore unless they can be aggregated. So unless they can kind of travel slash, like, make money slash get clicks. So where are we leaving room for, whether it's, like, the form to advance? Because, again, like, this goes back to,
I don't,
like,
think the form is really going to advance in this current state. And it's, if anything, it's what you're writing about. The pool kind of is shrinking. Now, it's, I think this is why, I mean, in particular, I already enjoy your writing, but I think it's especially important in a way because it's like, it's almost like fighting against that, or you're like, you're very much swimming upstream. Because one of the other questions I had was, like, reading this piece and thinking about just making content, and who knows, maybe this is interesting to people, not, I guess you're consuming content, so I'm hoping this is interesting to you, but do people still have attention spans? I think, and now this is, like, too general of a question in general, but I think in this specific process, like, do we still have the space to sort of enjoy and process, like, what we're seeing? Or are we just like, okay, I've consumed it, now to the next thing. Like sushi on a conveyor belt, you know? Like, give me the next Woj tweet. I've quote retweeted this, give my reaction. Now give me the next news item. Let me see that. Now I've seen quickly post a great game. Here's my reaction to that. Give me the next game so I can post the next one about the next thing. And the immediacy of social media sort of, like, facilitating this. And I guess just, maybe even in general, the fact that you can even choose where you give your attentions to, because there is such a high volume of what you can try to engage with that you can always just find essentially what you think and just stay in these little echo chambers. But I think in particular to you as somebody who writes and writes very much not for any of the five things on these things until I guess the creating community part.
Right.
But do you ever worry about that? Is that something in the back of your mind of, like, I might be writing something for people that may not have the attention span or the habits formed to actually read and consume and appreciate it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it depends where I'm writing. You know, I do write for a lot of different outlets, and I think there's an understanding that some of them I will necessarily adapt what I'm writing, whether that's just in length, whether that's in, you know, what the story is. For the newsletter, no. And, like, I talk about that in that piece. And I guess the irony of it is, like, I created this thing to be kind of the outlier, mm-hmm. like almost like the safe harbor where I could write how I wanted. And it would be a smaller thing. And if anything, it's like eclipsed everything else. And it's also become the most stable because no one can, I can fire myself. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, that's the only way I would stop doing that.
Right.
No one is going to tell me, like, you can't do this anymore. It's not sustainable. It's not financially, you know, worthwhile for us. So I think I do feel it. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not the most encouraging thing.
Right.
I also feel it when I look around at writers, broadcasters, like people who are starting, and I see what they're creating, and I understand why they are, because it's the safest thing mm-hmm. to, like, hold and keep a job.
Realistically, it's a lot of young people who are looking for a first, maybe a second job, or maybe even younger people who are pivoting from their very boring first jobs to a more enticing second job. But ultimately, you still need to get paid based off of this thing, and so you're responding to market forces, not necessarily being led by your own, like, creative expression.
Exactly. And I think, like, that's when we talk about form and what the kind of next iteration could be. We're losing that altogether because it's not being dictated now by creators or people that are working in the field. It's being mm-hmm. dictated by outside forces, which it would be naive to say that wasn't always there to a degree, those outside pressures.
But it's, like, in your face in a way that, like, you let your bosses worry about that in the past as a writer, and now you're like, I'm worrying about that as a
exactly.
writer. Yeah, and I'm worrying about that before I even put pen to page.
Yeah, and it can be, like, totally deterring, because it's like you think again about, like, how much time is this going to take, mm-hmm. and how much time do I have to, like, cut clips from this game, talk over them, you know, and then, like, try and get that out on my YouTube channel, on social media, whatever.
Yeah, it's a lot now.
Like, it takes a lot of time, and that's the thing, again, like, in no way am I disparaging people that make capital C content, because mm-hmm. I understand the reality of it in terms of, like, these are where jobs are and the necessity of it. What I wonder is, like, the push-pull of, like, when everything has to be content, what's left? You know what I mean? Like, can you create for the sake of creating? And especially in, you know, what I'm most comfortable with is, like, long form mm-hmm. kind of profile writing, feature writing. Yes, I do worry if people have the attention span for that and want it. I mean, I hear, like, from the community aspect of what I've created around the newsletter, yes, I do hear from people that they're interested in that. Mm-hmm. I have people reach out to me after stories, whether they're, you know, at Dime or some of the other places I do more long form writing for, and they enjoy it. So I still think this is a little bit like when, like, you know, e-readers came out and people were like, is anyone ever going to read a physical book again? It's like, yes, there will always be people who prefer certain forms over others. So I trust they'll be there. I do wonder how they're going to get eclipsed, especially within these kind of more specific parallels of sports media.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is I just want to read a quote and then we'll wrap. But this is from your piece. Sports writing has come to feel safest for the common denominator, and even then, not really. Writing that offers the play-by-play of what happened, and if it offers opinion or perspective, is the type that's being so widely hammered through the machine of social media groupthink that it's already accounted for any loose ends or rough edges. It preempts the what-ifs, the sure buts, has sanded away anything that could prompt a question or reply, streamlined to project farthest in SEO return, so smooth that nothing sticks, a box score as a blog. The pressure to drive engagement, to stay employed, most new jobs are coming from gambling properties, but with no outlet is immune to aggregation. Part of it is emulation. Form wants to find form. What I wonder and worry about when it's perceived to only be safe to work right, to write one way, it stops being advantageous to push forward, to stumble or strive to the next thing, and streamlining the world and the industry we lament for shrinking grows that much smaller, that much faster. So, Katie, thank you for writing this column, but most of all, thank you for coming on the show and taking it in the direction that it doesn't always go. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
Hopefully
we didn't get too bleak about it.
No, it's okay.
Think about these things.
You don't know. There's not many good reasons to watch the Raptors. you have very few places to read about the Raptors or watch it. Anyway, we're going to take another break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Yoswin Liu. Once again, thank you to Katie Heindel for joining us on the program. And yeah, if I haven't mentioned it enough, subscribe to Basketball Feelings on Substack. It'll go straight to your inbox. And I do actually kind of really enjoy now reading things in my emails. Like I don't want to read and respond to emails, to be very clear. No one likes doing that, but I enjoy getting pieces directly sent there. And I think that that's where, honestly, that's where I read Mark Stein. That's where I read Katie. That's where I read our next guest, Coach David Thorpe, who we'll bring on shortly. But yeah, I think it's, you have to be a lot more intentional with like what you're trying to consume or like trying to read and follow. And I think that that's something that one of the reasons why we wanted to have that previous discussion. I mean, personally to me, it felt important. I do hope that it was important for everyone else to hear as well. But yeah, I mean, I think that we are in the space right now where we have a lot less outlets. And with that comes a lot less like opportunities to sort of like read and appreciate and sort of engage with not just the game itself, but the community around the game itself. And yeah, I think that's something that I appreciate most about this show is the fact that we have these spaces to be able to do it. And, you know, maybe that's not as important as what we say. I don't think it should be, to be honest, as important as what we say or sort of the discussions that we have here and sort of the interviews that we're able to get and talk to the, you know, the various people in the game, insiders, look around the league. Of course, that there's like a super huge value in that. But I think more than anything else, like especially as a person that is obviously on the show and hosting the show and trying to create the appreciation around the show, like I think that for me, that's what I enjoy most is building that community and getting to sort of like create this space and actually talk about it. And yeah, so it's always great to get Katie on. Raptors-wise, I mean, you've already seen the injury updates for today. They're not optimistic. And I'll refer to Michael Grange, who is on this road trip. And I did jokingly tweet that he is going to be starting at backup center tonight in Denver. Michael Grange's latest injury update. And here it is, all right. Gary Trent Jr. is now questionable with a groin strain. Quickly is also questionable with a hip flexor. Chris Boucher and Bruce Brown are questionable. Barrett is probable, so that's good. We'll probably get Barrett out, and the rest are out. And then it was confirmed shortly thereafter by Raptors PR that, yeah, it says questionable, but they're out. Boucher, Quickly, and Trent Jr. are all out. And, of course, those are the three principal players that took place and that sort of, like, were the main characters in the Portland game, right? And, you know, when you think back to that game, and I'm pretty sure I gave those three the three stars as well, of, you know, Quickly being super engaged, 29 points, you know, Gary doing a lot of the backup scoring, 23 points, and then just Chris's hustle sort of rounding out the group. That was the Raptors then. And now you don't even have them on top of not having Scotty, on top of not having Jakob, and they're playing the reigning champions. And that's why I hope you guys understand that we are pivoting off the Raptors for the rest of the show, at least in this segment, and we're going to talk about some other teams around the league. And joining me to do that is David Thorpe. Coach, how you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you, Will?
I'm doing well, personally. I'm doing well. I know the subjects on this Raptor show today have not been, like, super upbeat. But, I mean, like, it's the Raptors are not in a good place. Like, we can kind of hold the ability to the up and down. This is the one time I called you. It was like, David, let's not talk about Raptors. Like, if you have some Raptor thoughts, I mean, sure, you can offer them. But as you have told me, both privately and also on the show before, too, you have so much to focus on covering the whole league, so many clients that you work with, that you need to manage your time. And I don't know how much time you're giving to the Raptors in particular these days, but I do know that you wrote about the Pacers recently, so I kind of wanted to talk about the Pacers. I think to Raptor fans, the angle here is the Raptors do own the Pacers pick because of the Pascal Siakam trade, so we will be tapping into the Pacers just to see how they're doing. Not to say we're rooting against them, but, you know, when they lose, it is kind of nice for the Raptors to get more ping pong balls, such as the state of affairs. But yeah, what are your thoughts on, I think in general, obviously they made the trade for Pascal to bring him to Indiana. How have you seen Pascal integrate himself into the Pacers, and also how the Pacers have sort of adapted to adding someone like Pascal, who quite frankly is much better than what they had previously with Bruce Brown and Jordan Wara?
So the NBA, it's funny how the NBA landscape is. You know, the old saying, it's someone's trash, it's another person's treasure. In the NBA, you can have a similar situation. So to me, the Knicks have done really well, but RJ Barrett was not playing well there. And I'm not going to waste time now going into the whys. I'm not even sure I know. I only have some suspicions. He's been so much better in Toronto. Siakam was doing just fine in Toronto, obviously, but I don't think he even realized how miserable he was until he got to Indiana, where it's such a lighter feeling. And I had people close to him telling me, like, they've never seen him smile so much and just emote in such an animated way. It's not something that we're used to seeing from him. And so from his perspective, I mean, he played really well yesterday. They had a huge win in Orlando. They've had some really big wins and not too many bad losses other than a stretch where Tyrese was really struggling. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about Tyrese.
Yeah.
That's probably the article you're referring to. Yeah. So that certainly wasn't Pascal's fault. I don't really know what it was. We only can speculate. But, I mean, I was telling some people this morning, we were talking about the NBA, and I don't know where Pascal ranks is in terms of where he is in the league. Let's just say top 25. I'm making up the number. It doesn't matter. That part also doesn't matter. What matters is Indiana's used to losing players, not getting them. Mm-hmm. And so the question isn't where does Pascal rank. If you want to, for example, if they're going to keep him going forward, which everyone assumes is already a done deal at a max level, it's not whether or not he's earned the max. It's, well, who can they get better than him? Mm-hmm. And the answer is almost always nobody. They don't have anyone that can guard big wings. Mm-hmm. Well, you can look up the numbers last night. He really did a good job on Paolo Banchero.
Yeah, I watched the game.
Like,
yeah.
It wasn't close to who the better player was in the game. As Pascal should be better. He's 29.
Right, sure. Yeah,
Paolo's young, but he blew by him like he wasn't there. And that's something that I've noticed with Siakam after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. He's got his quickness and his speed back. They don't know how to use him at all. He goes through long stretches where he almost doesn't touch it. When he gets it, really good things happen.
Yeah, I think that's the question I was asking, because I feel like, especially having watched him so closely here in Toronto, his whole career here in Toronto, like I feel like most Raptor fans have a pretty intuitive sense of how to best use Siakam. We actually had a lot of discussions on the show earlier this year, at least while he was still a member of the Raptors, just about finding his spots and sort of like whatever. I think for Indiana, it is interesting because it almost feels like at times they take turns. And I don't know it's intentional. I don't think Pascal's like, it's my turn. Or Haliburton says, it's my turn.
100% not.
I think Benedict Mathurin says, it's my turn. But that's
every
a little
time.
It is his turn quite often. And unfortunately, he's out with injury. And sometimes he does a lot with it. Like, it's not against Mathurin. I like the fact that he's an aggressive player. It makes him who he is. But
I don't.
Okay, well, that's fair. But I think in general, you do see like certain pauses where you don't always see the two-man game, I guess, forming as immediately. And I think maybe even in the Toronto angle, we kind of saw that immediately. It was like, Quickly and Scotty, that's going to make sense. They're going to play a beautiful two-man game, you know, all that. But then it took time to sort of work towards that. How is that pairing between Pascal and Tyrese, how is that coming along, and how can that help both of those two players sort of like take the load off of each other? Because that's what a really good 1-2 duo should be doing.
There's a lot to this. I don't know this because I've not asked my people in Indiana, but I have a feeling Carlisle's got some packages he's just not going to roll out right now.
Okay.
We normally see the Siakam Haliburton duo in late in games.
Yeah.
And it's really good. They won a game, I don't remember, might have been Detroit, so not that much of a win, but still, a win's a win, where I think Siakam scored like 4 paint buckets in 5 possessions or something like that, all from Tyrese's passing. And it was Pascal posting. It was pick and roll. It was one time he drove and kicked to Tyrese for a 3, and then it was just a brilliant pass by Tyrese, and Pascal's got amazing hands right at the rim when he scored. It was just really nice. They did a couple of those yesterday when the game was still in question in Orlando, and the two of them did well. But we don't see a lot of them together. The taking turns point is very good, but it's not Tyrese and Pascal. It's all of a sudden, as someone who's watched the Pacers for a good amount this year, before the trade too, it's Aaron Nesmith feeling like, well, where am I going to be in this new universe? Mm-hmm. So he's thirstier than ever before. Miles Turner, thirstier than I've ever seen him, to the point where Andrew Nembhard is lucky to get a shot a half mm-hmm. in some games. Mm-hmm. And he's really good. You're better off playing off the bench, which is what Rick realized. Is in the offseason, they're going to have some serious issues to deal with some of those role players who are right now aren't really bending to the knee of Tyrese Pascal being the – and this is common, by the way, in the NBA.
Sure.
Everyone wants to fight for the turf. But now the way Rick's handled it is, okay, I'll just bring in Andrew and Pascal with a second unit, let them cook.
Right, right.
Well, in the case of Pascal especially. With TJ comes in early, mm-hmm. Plays with Tyrese. TJ McConnell's doing well. He doesn't need Pascal for that. I think it's going to help Tyrese a ton because Pascal still has so much gravity and such a willing passer. And so there was a period of time where he was the best on-off player in the league 10, 15 games into the trade. But Tyrese wasn't really playing. They've only played like 10, 11 games together, something like that.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of process there. But I'm encouraged by what I think they can look like down the road. It won't necessarily be this year. And I'm encouraged by Pascal's defense in the last few games, especially. I'll just tell you the truth. Toronto plays garbage defense, has for quite a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because
they've gotten away with it because of their personnel. It's switching everything at all times. It's lazy. It's just lazy defense. I'm not saying it didn't always work. It has worked sometimes. It's really bad habits because no one else really plays that way except for maybe when the Rockets had James. Like you have to have more versatility to what you're doing defensively. And I think Darko was doing that some, but the habits are ingrained. And so that's not what they want to do in Indiana because they can't. Miles Turner can't do that.
No.
Right. So, and neither can some of their guards. Scotty Barnes isn't a guard there anymore, you know? So Siakam's gotten much better at dealing with screens, not dying on them, getting over the top and chasing, drop coverage. He was really good yesterday in some drop coverage because they're playing him in some small ball five, and it's really working well. So, I think they're still experimenting with all of that, and we won't even know till next year really what it all looks like. But I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing for them going forward. It's a tough league, and the East is tough, but I think they have the makings anyway of what can be a really special team.
Yeah, I think – you know, first off, I didn't fully appreciate, I guess, it's a totally different team. And I think the Raptors, we just talked about this in the first hour with Katie, very different iterations of this team. The Raptors have been like four or five different teams. Tonight, the team that takes the court will be like entirely unrecognizable in terms of who they play against the Nuggets. Do not tune into that game, David. But I don't have to tell you that. But I think for the Pacers, they started the season really bright, really exciting. Everyone's playing off of Halliburton's exuberance, and he loves to share the ball. It's a great attribute for a young star to have, and it's so easy for everyone to sort of play. Nesmith, like, this is more freedom I've ever had offensively, and his three-point shot has taken off. He can sort of have his turn. Turner, I feel like every time he scores is an assist from Halliburton. It feels so much like, at least at the start of this season, they had a good two-man pairing. But then I think when Halliburton got injured, and we all saw the play, I mean, he like hit the splits. I think he split like it was a wet spot. And he came back so quickly, and then he has since then not looked the same. And I think that's been so disappointing to me watching the Pacers because it's basically whether or not Halliburton has it. And if he doesn't have it, this is just an entirely different team. So I'm curious to see what you're seeing from Halliburton, not just from the physical side, but even from the emotional side, which you wrote about as well.
It's very much the case that Tyrese has had some really horrific games, like 0 for 6 twice. 0 for 6, maybe 0 for, twice in a row. You're going to lose those games when you're in Indiana.
Yeah.
They just aren't good enough yet, and they don't feature Nembhard as much as I wish they would, although TJ has come around now.
TJ's just playing great.
So if Tyrese isn't giving them numbers, maybe then TJ can. They don't know how to let – Siakam's had a triple-double. He's almost had another triple-double. The team hasn't yet figured out – the team, Rick knows, I'm sure, hasn't yet figured out that if you get the ball to Pascal early, you're probably going to get it back because he's going to get doubled a lot. Like Orlando was doubling him in the post a lot yesterday. And so he figured out, too, maybe I should attack quicker before the double comes. He's beating people with quickness and then power. Like he loves going baseline now and just knocking into his man. Pascal's a big, strong 6'9 dude. And he's getting buckets that way. He's obviously – his shot is – He's not shot great in the last week. That's going to happen, but he was well over. He's over well over 40%, I think, since like December 1. Mm-hmm. And that's not something Toronto. He started 5-53 for the Raptors. I don't blame Toronto for that, by the way.
Yeah,
he just
it just happens. Shots. It just happens.
Yeah, it really was bad for him. I think it was the media day and all the negative stuff. And I think it just got to him, which is very normal for a player who is not a psychopath. You know,
sure.
they don't. I mean, I know for a fact Pascal wishes he could have stayed in Toronto forever. And let me say this for you on your show. The idea that Barnes and Siakam could not have been an incredibly dynamic duo together is just ridiculous. I won't cuss.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I gave the same speech in 2010 when Dwayne Wade and LeBron James were struggling and everyone just knew it wouldn't work out. And at ESPN, I couldn't curse there either. Mm-hmm. But I was very vociferous about you're out of your effing mind if you don't think Wade and LeBron – can be incredible together. Yeah. Give them some time.
Right.
And that's how I feel about with Scottie and Pascal. I think they could have been incredible together. And I think the same with Tyrese. Tyrese has to be able to make threes. No big deal. He's normally been a great shooter, not so much lately. But part of that is his ability to jet by you with craft, not so much with quickness, but with craft, because he's such a threat to step sideways and step backwards to shoot.
Yeah.
So he just kind of flips forward and backwards. I teach this now to players. Mm. I teach the Halliburton. It's a dance that he does. It's really great. But he was unable to really burst by people and be a threat at the rim. That's coming back now. It was gone for a while. He couldn't go by anybody.
Yeah.
That's coming back. The bigger issue is the randomness that they play, which is beautiful, also is costing them. They need to be a little more deliberate about when they get the ball to Siakam at the nail or elbows, it's a money offense.
Yeah.
When they get the ball to Tyrese within the final 10 seconds of a clock after moving it, it's money.
Mm-hmm.
But when Nesmith and Ben and Miles all feel like I can take this shot even though you're not open, like anything else that breaks down, the Orlando game yesterday was interesting. I don't remember how many points they had after 6 minutes, but
they
it might have been
very
like
slow.
Two.
2 points. 2 points in 6 minutes.
It was 2.6 minutes where I thought, And then I texted someone. I was watching the game, actually, and I said, if they score seven – this is the second quarter. If they score 17 points the final 6 minutes of the second quarter, I think they have a good chance to win the game because they'll have kind of gotten themselves going. Because I knew Orlando wasn't going to score forever. Indiana's improved defensively. In the last 15 games, they're 20th, which for them is pretty good because Halliburton is not a good defender. Mathurin's an awful defender, and they play a good amount. Obviously, Ben was out last night. It will be the rest of the year, it looks like. Well, they scored 19 points those last 6 minutes.
Mm.
Siakam was a big part of that. Halliburton made a big shot. Mm-hmm. And then they just rolled the Magic, which is not an easy team to roll, although Suggs and Fultz being out matters.
For sure.
Because Caleb Houston isn't to their level yet. But the way Indiana played defensively, I think, is encouraging for them. I do think they're going to be very good next year. I'm not married to their whole team. I have a feeling there'll be some movement. But they still can really put together an incredible offense, and their defense is getting better, and they'll figure some stuff out. And the playoffs will be good for them too, because it'll melt them, but also help them reform maybe even better the following season.
Yeah, for sure. I think from the Toronto perspective, it's just like, well, number one, how's Pascal doing? But I think number two is just like, you know, when they were sliding a little bit, it was like, well, the pick's getting better and better. But I do think that Indiana was playing below their level, and it was clearly because Halliburton was not ready. And I think that
it was only because of Halliburton.
Yeah,
they could be fourth or fifth seed, but when this is such a scramble in the East with the Knicks injuries, with Donovan's injuries, they probably get to six, but they could get to four or five.
Well, there's just this big crush, as you mentioned, right, between the four seed right now with the Knicks, and they're at 37-27, and the Miami Heat were at 35-29, so just four games behind. There's also the Magic, the Sixers, and the Pacers are right in the middle of that. And, of course, it's just a matter of how these teams – manage the injuries. A team that in the East that has been catching my eye recently, I feel like I'm always watching the Bucks on the right night, because I watch the Bucks now and I'm like, they look a lot better. They look a lot more engaged. They're playing defense. They're getting back in transition. And then when I watch Dame, the start of the season, I'm thinking, sometimes he looks like Dame and sometimes I don't recognize who this guy is. And now every single time I watch Dame, I'm like, I get it. In the fourth quarter, he's really involved. Last night in the fourth quarter, I think he had like 16 points to beat the Clippers for the second time. Yeah, the Bucks are 7-2 post All-Star break, and they clearly needed that time because they brought in new coach Doc Rivers, finally regroup with the team, try to make a push. are you buying this version of the Bucks right now, which to me finally looks like they're playing up to their preseason expectations now?
Am I buying them to do what? To be the Eastern champs?
Yeah, I think that was the expectation. So maybe even that. Or at least maybe the bar has moved and Boston is so good. Can they at least push Boston?
Yeah. That's a better – the second one's a better thing to consider. Yeah, they could push Boston. I don't think – I mean, Boston's really tremendous. So yeah. Barring injury, they're just – their starting five is so magnificent in every way. They really – hats off to Brad Stevens and to Joe. Like, they've done a great job. I have a player that I talked to on the Bucks who has been around, seen really good situations and really bad ones. And he was really optimistic about Milwaukee's culture. He is very impressed with the way the guys hold each other accountable and are positive. He literally said, you know, I've been at places where now all they want to do is point fingers. It's everyone else's fault but mine. And he says, just not how it is here. He specifically pointed out Giannis, and he said Giannis is on his own a lot, but isn't just pointing fingers. He points himself to Brook Lopez is great. He likes Dame a lot. He likes everybody. They are Doc. I think Doc has said that he went back and found some Terry Stott stuff that he's running with Dame.
Okay.
That I don't know why Adrian wasn't, and I had someone
that's
say
awkward.
To me. Yeah, I had someone say to me, a lot of this is addition by subtraction. And I was a big Adrian Griffin fan. I coached him at five-star camp when he was 16.
Oh, wow.
He won't remember, but I remember. I knew he was really a talented player from Wichita, if I remember right. He was just really negative. And I spoke to one of Terry Stott's best friends in coaching because he quit.
Yeah.
And it was, this guy was just a total jerk to me. And I'm not putting up with it. So the person I talked to was upset with Terry. Like, dude, you can't just leave. Like, I don't know if you get back into it. And he just said, I'm not taking this from anyone, much less the guy's never been a head coach before. I'm a grown man. No one's going to treat me that way. Well, apparently that wasn't unique. It wasn't a one-off. And it's weird. I don't know Adrian. I've never met him since he was 16 or talked to him. But I remember saying this about a former Raptors coach named Sam Mitchell. As an assistant coach, delightful. Like the players I had that played for him as his coach, they liked him. He was fun and charismatic. He would get to be the head coach and he would just be irascible, just mean and angry and bitter. I'm thinking, dude, you got paid, buddy. You're the head coach and have fun. And some guys just don't like Stan Van Gundy is a delightful person. Really.
I love him
loving,
on the broadcast.
Delightful. Yeah. Right. Not as a head coach. Super negative.
Totally.
It's just some guys just struggle to manage that. Honestly, It's one reason why I kind of got out of coaching is I had a feeling I'm a pretty relatively fun guy to be around and happy.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have been as a coach. The losses just ate me up in the wins. I felt like I'm supposed to win, but losing killed me. So I just I didn't want to be bitter my whole life. And so Doc is he's not bitter, you know. And he's not Adrian Griffin. So if he went back and ran some Portland stuff for Dame, good for you, Doc. That's smart to get Dame invested that way and do that kind of stuff. I still don't think they were smart to get him and not smart to lose Drew to Boston.
Yeah.
Because that's going to probably push them over the top. They're probably going to win the championship. Not likely, but still probably. If it used to always be you pick the field over the favorite, I don't know that I'd pick the field right now, Will, if I was asked. I'd probably pick the favorite to win the championship. They're just that. They're so much better than everybody.
Better than Denver?
Yeah.
You think Boston's better than Denver? All right.
That's I do. I understand why you like Denver so much. It's not rocket science. I like them. I think Boston's going to be able to solve it. I will say this. I think Jokic has a lot more to give. I think he's cruising.
Right, yeah.
Because he's smart.
Yeah. He'll be cruising tonight. Don't worry.
Yeah, if he plays.
You don't need
the first quarter.
Yeah,
but right. But I get it. I think their starting five is cruising something. But I also think that's going to harm them a little bit. It's not so easy to turn the switch. The Pistons used to try that for years when they were really good, and they only won one title. I think Boston has an unsolvable – Jokic is unsolvable, but the Celtics starting five is, and they can really guard.
Right.
And Porzingis really helps Boston – answer the question of what do we do when our threes aren't falling. They have defense. and they have KP in the paint some.
Right.
And Derek White can score more than you think.
Yeah.
Jrue Holiday can score more than you think when you've got the talent around them. So I think Milwaukee let's put it this way, they've not faced Indiana well this year.
No.
They better hope it's not a 3-6 situation or a 2-7 even. That Indiana's speed can really bother Milwaukee. So it remains to be seen what happens. But either way, it's worked out well for them. They're defending much, much better. That's the big thing.
For sure. I feel like Doc walked into – I mean, obviously everyone understood that Doc was walking into a really good situation talent-wise. Maybe in the locker room, or maybe they were frustrated with the previous coaching, whatever. But
yeah.
It was also a really good situation in that some of the fixers were like the stuff that is – most obvious, like, we got to get back in transition. Let's become a really good transition defense team. It's really prioritized. You know what? Let's actually play more Giannis Dame two-man game. They could have made me the head coach, and that would have been one of my number one points on the bullet board, was like, hey, we got to do this. And so they are kind of improving on that front. But I do wonder, too, of like, you know, for the Bucks in general, for a while, they were like moving back towards the pack. Like, they weren't definitively number two. I would say Philadelphia, when Joel was healthy, was kind of number two in the conference for a lot of this season, obviously behind Boston. Even New York, when they went on a hot stretch, Cleveland went on a hot stretch. Now I feel back like, okay, Milwaukee, I would take them number two over the rest of the East. Are you at that level of confidence with them?
If everyone was healthy, probably not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Probably not.
Okay.
All right. I really liked what Cleveland was doing. Donovan Mitchell is just, he's the best secret weapon in the league, and he's not so secret, but he's better than what you think. Mm-hmm. He's truly a remarkable, remarkable player. And having players that have, having worked with players that are teammates of his, have been teammates of his also, way better human being than I think people realize.
Mm. Interesting.
Way better human being than people. People like playing with him. He could be a diva some, like a lot of superstars can be, but, he's a tremendous player, really, truly a gifted offensive monster, firepower guy. And Darius Garland's very good, and Mobley's got a real chance, and I like Strus and Niang when George is playing well, which isn't always the case. I get that. But Jared Allen, too. JB's done a good job. Yeah, I think Cleveland could be – it's going to be – it's close. Mm. It's easy to say Dame and Giannis, but the Dame we're getting now is a good player. He's not an all-NBA player. Look up his metrics. He's good. What is he, 37% from three? Yeah. Giannis is still the big engine there.
For sure.
And I think Giannis is a truly incredible player. And Doc's kind of gotten out of his way some, which is good. But to your point, I think you made a really good point, Will. I don't follow the Premier League much, but I do have ownership of a team that used to be in the Premier League and isn't there anymore. And I followed it more when we were in the Premier League, and now we're one below. And hopefully not dropping again. You know, when you change coaches, you get a kind of surge at first.
Yeah, yeah. Every time. Yep.
Right. I think that's why they do it. I think they do it for what you just said. It's easier to be the fresh face and say, oh, we got to fix this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And then teams get acclimated to you. So it's like in baseball, the pitcher comes in and the batters haven't seen him first round through.
Yeah.
They start seeing him second, third time.
Right.
And so we haven't seen that with Doc just yet. We have to wait and see what happens there. But I do like the fact that there's good accountability there, and he's running some good stuff for Dame. That will play well no matter what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think for me, too, if what I'm really about with the Bucks, not necessarily with the personnel, it's a really old roster. Like, it's by far, to me, the oldest rotation in the league. Like, everybody that comes in is 30-plus, and I enjoy the fact that Pat Beverly comes in and he brings his personality and his intensity, and him and Bobby Portis are – every game I'm watching – again, I'm watching all the right Bucks games, and they're always chest bumping each other, and they're like, yeah, we just got this stop. And Bobby Portis hasn't missed a shot since I started watching them in the last week or so. But, yeah, I mean, I do feel like when the intensity gets to a higher level, I do wonder how much endurance these older guys got. But,
That's why Indiana has success. That's why Indy's had success against them. And I want to say something on Pat Bev. The player I spoke to specifically mentioned Pat Bev when he said, I forgot that when you asked me earlier, the guy that's done the best job of holding guys accountable and building the culture has been Pat Bev. Mm. And I'm not his agent. I've never met Pat Bev. I don't work with him.
Yeah.
But if you're a team, I'm telling for every GM that's out there, I had a player in the Lakers tell me that a year ago.
Mm.
Literally a year ago. Wasn't LeBron. It wasn't AD. Not even close. in the group chat on their phones and in person, Pat Bev was the best teammate, the most spirited guy. I don't know. I didn't talk to guys in Minnesota before that, but we all saw what that team did with Pat Bev.
Yeah.
We're seeing it again in Milwaukee. Pat Bev brings a genuine, authentic energy and level of competitiveness that I think really matters. Energy is a talent. Mm-hmm. Toughness is a talent.
Yeah.
And when it's contagious, even better. And so I think that's real. I think that will stick when they get to the postseason. It just may not be enough against some of these teams, but there's no question they're better off than they were, you know, 6 weeks ago.
I think even Chicago, I mean, we forget that Pat Bev was in Chicago, but he Raptors lost in the play-in game. Like, that team also really cited that same kind of energy. And it makes me wonder, like, are NBA locker rooms just, like, bereft of personality? You know, because I feel like when I hear these old players talk on – everyone, old players got a podcast now, too. When they talk about they're always talking about the locker room dynamics and how it was run. And that's always the part that's most interesting to me because, obviously, 99.9% of people are never going to be in these dynamics or even directly connected to them, being their agent or trainer or coach or whatever. But I do wonder what locker rooms sound like and look like now. Because sometimes as a reporter, I'll go in a locker room and stuff like that. It's usually pretty quiet and not nearly the same way as this described by the former players. So maybe that's just a question that I have in general. But what are locker rooms like nowadays in the NBA?
I mean, do you want me to answer?
Yes.
I do think that they are more disjointed than maybe they were. If you have time, I'll give you a 30-second version of a story.
Absolutely.
When the Heat won the 06 championship, I was on vacation with my wife and, at that point, 5-year-old twins. Mm. When the Heat played the Bulls, if I remember right, in round one, and this is 06. And my very first client, Udonis Haslam, called me, and I did not help guys during the season back then. So I didn't speak to him, but maybe, you know, once a month, twice a month back then. And he was super frustrated. They were tied 2-2 to the Bulls, and he was very frustrated. And he said to me, "This has been the closest team I've ever played on going back, you know, even through college," which was very close with Mike Miller's and all of his friends at Florida. He said, "We're closer." He said, "Coach, we went to the movies, and when we go to the movies, it's 15 dudes. We're doing everything together." And I gave him some speech, whatever. Well, they ended up beating the Bulls in 6. And then they beat the Nets, I think, in 5. And, you know, soon enough, they're world champions, okay? Mm-hmm. They just made it through. Pat Riley did a great job, too, galvanizing that team. I don't think that exists at all anymore. Mm-hmm. I think it was rare then. It's unheard of now.
Yeah.
But with social media, players can be by themselves and have a good time and feel like they're connecting with people. Mm-hmm. And so there is no 15 dudes to a movie anymore. I will tell you that Corey Brewer told me when he went to Oklahoma City late in the season, it was him, Paul George, Carmelo, Steven Adams, and Russell. They went to dinner every night together on road trips, just those five, to try to figure out a way to get some chemistry. I don't think that's happening either. Mm-hmm. The smart teams of the future will find a way to foster that dynamic. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if OKC has some of that. Mm. I really wouldn't. I've not asked anybody. But I think that really matters. I think that really matters. If I was running a team, which will never happen probably, I don't think it's anything I want to do, I'd probably pay someone $100,000 a year to just do that.
Yeah.
Your job is not go bowling as a team function unless we're doing it to try to create the incentive for guys to get them comfortable just doing it on their own. That's when you've succeeded, when it's not a team thing. It's coming in genuinely and organically from your players, realizing I just am a happier person when I'm with my teammates. Mm. And that I don't think is happening, if at all, not very often in NBA locker rooms typically.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really interesting because, again, these are things that you can't see – you can't necessarily quantify as much, but then again, when you see it on the court, sometimes you see some really disconnected products. And I feel, honestly, with the Raptors the last couple of years, we've seen some disconnected product. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that, like, the Raptors need to get Patrick Beverley in particular, but I do think that that kind of, like, personality that drives and that, like, is clearly visceral in a way that forces people to connect and interact, I think can be very, very important. And so... yeah, these are the little, I guess these are the behind the scenes things and the little tidbits that you don't fully appreciate unless, you know, you work directly with the situation. So, David, I appreciate your time. You know, everyone go listen to True Hoop. read True Hoop, subscribe to True Hoop. I can't say it enough. I've really appreciated the time and the perspective you've always given me. So thank you.
Right back at you, Will. I don't agree to do many of these anymore because I do two of my own every week, and then I'm busy enough as it is, but it's hard for me to turn you down, my man.
Yeah, and this, hey, we made it through a whole interview without me asking, what do you think of Scotty Barnes? I mean, this is the first time ever, but, in the future, we'll ask you that again, but I appreciate, this opportunity to go in a different direction today. So thanks, David.
Oh, my God, be well.
Yeah, David Thorpe. Appreciate it, Coach. So much for joining us on the program once again. Yeah, I mean, I didn't ask him as many Raptor questions because, he'll be very frank about this, but he's obviously got to be very intentional about sort of what time and sort of what things he gives energy towards. And when the team is struggling like this, a lot of people are going to tune out. And so that's going to happen. But ultimately, when he tunes back in, we will get more of his Raptors thoughts.
Scotty Barnes is all-star.
That was great, man. That was great. That was the reason to watch the Raptors this year, was that rant by Darko and that progression by Scotty that he predicted, rightly so. And then without that, you kind of left with this situation tonight, which I will touch on the game tonight against the Denver Nuggets, the reigning champions. Who will the Raptors have in their lineup? And also just wrap with a couple of concluding thoughts on the team. So to bring it back to the Raptors. But anyway, you've been listening to the Raptors show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, William Liu. So, change of pace here. Fourth segment. I'm going to be solo on this one. Just wanted to create a little bit of space to talk about the Raptors and sort of where things are from a bigger perspective and then focus on tonight's game against Denver. By the way, I just went through this exercise and wrote down the rotation for tonight's game. And it's because of the injuries tonight. I think the rotation tonight will be Kelly Olynyk starting a five. Let's say Ochai starting a four nominally, even though he's 6'4", but Ochai will be the four. RJ will be the three in this one. RJ thankfully has returned from flu, and he was out the last couple of games. Well, he missed the last game, his absence was quite noticeable. Let's just say that much. Grady will be the two. And then, honestly, the only point guard left on the roster, at least that's healthy, is Javon Freeman Liberty. So I assume that he will go from start of the week not even really being much of the rotation, probably third string guard, to now starting so a point guard. So very happy for him. And then your three bench players to come off the bench for tonight's game. And there is a fourth if necessary. Garrett Temple can come off the bench if necessary, but let's be realistic about this. The three that will prominently feature will be Jonte Porter, who, because Chris Boucher will be absent, you will see Jonte Porter probably go up against his brother, Michael Porter Jr., which will be very cool to see for that family in particular, I guess. Jordan Wara, who I'm personally looking to see more out of. He's been given more of an opportunity, but he's struggled quite mightily of late, and he's been sort of benched a couple of times. Hopefully that doesn't happen tonight, because again, there's nobody else to bring off this bench. And then you will have Jalen McDaniels as your third sub off the bench. So this is going to be very difficult tonight. But I think zooming out of the specific moments, because we've already sort of detached from the idea that they need to provide from us specifically from moment to moment, it's really about the bigger picture. How do the Raptors look at the bigger picture this season? When we look back on it, what were some of the progress points? What were some of the steps that they made backwards? Clearly, they've changed a lot of players. As I mentioned earlier, 28 players have entered and played actual minutes wearing a Toronto Raptors uniform this season. 28. That has to be a franchise record for how many players. Because, again, it's typically, 15 traditionally have been on the roster. I think they've added two-way spots, so make that 17, 18. Recently, it's been 18. To go to 18 to 28 is quite substantial, and obviously it reflects on the amount of injuries the Raptors have had, the amount of trades that have taken place. Just a very odd year in general. Clearly, this is not what they typically would do or would be used to. But at least in the bigger picture, what have been some of the wins and lessons, I suppose. And number one for me is just that Scotty Barnes has made this jump. Now, it's unfortunate that we don't get to see the remainder of the season. I thought that was going to be such an important thing for him to sort of lead and find a way for the young guys to grow. Unfortunately, he got hurt on a random play where he made a contest at the basket and quickly ended up kind of kicking his hand. In any case, we're probably not going to see him for the rest of the year. I know that there's still some question about it, but let's be realistic. Are you going to force him to come back earlier for a team that is most likely going to be one of the worst in the league in the remaining 17, 18 games here? Scotty made this leap, and I think that that's the most important thing you wanted to see out of this year, right? You've seen him make the leap towards being an all-star. The consistency, I think, from night to night was so much better than what it was last season. We've always seen the ability, and he's improved some of the ability. The three-point shooting start of the season was really good. It did curtail, but I think he was able to replace it with other forms of scoring. The level of engagement that I was talking about in hour one with Katie, that's been really, really much better as well. And I think that collectively that's led to a more engaged version, a more productive version, and ultimately an all-star version of Scotty Barnes. In the immortal words of Darko Arjakovic, Scotty Barnes is going to be an all-star, and he actually was. I think the next thing for him now is that's one jump. The Raptors needed to make another jump. And I think that, you know, it's obviously very difficult, and it's not to sort of advance past how much he's already done. But realistically, the Raptors actually need him to make another jump to even push the Raptors back into the playoffs and ultimately to win at a higher level when we're talking about getting to the playoffs, winning one or two rounds. These are steps that are realistic for Scotty. I think that, again, he's shown you such high flashes of games that you just want to see a more consistent effort throughout, and he's already done a better job of it, but you need to see an even bigger progression of that. And I think, to me, when you look back on the season, you will need to see that, okay, he's solidified all the things that he needs to do. Now, what are some of the things that he can do at an even higher level? And I think, for me, the one-on-one scoring, the ability to get his own shot, something really consistent, something that consistently draws double teams, I would love to see that aspect added to his game. If he gets a go-to shot on top of what he's already doing, that's how he's going to make the next jump towards winning. But that's been the biggest lesson of this year. I think, obviously, the Raptors bringing back Emmanuel Quickley, bringing back RJ Barrett, those have been really positive. Those are guys that I feel can be starters for the Raptors and should be starters for the Raptors, and I feel that they can do that with them actually contributing towards winning. I mean, Quickley, of late, my question for him is all season since the trade is, can he be a number two? And I think at times he wasn't looking like a number two. At times he wasn't even involved like a number two. But right now, with Scotty being out, he's been so impactful since the All-Star break. I mentioned the numbers earlier. He's played 9 games. He's averaging 37 minutes per game in this stretch. He's averaging 22 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, 46% shooting from the field, 43 from three. He's generating almost all of his own offense, so that makes it even more impressive. But the playmaking is also really good. We saw him have that 18-assist game against Phoenix. This is what we needed to see alongside of Scotty. And, of course, that he's not going to get the same amount of touches, maybe even the same amount of freedom. I get all that. But at least you're seeing on paper what he can do right now with when he's running the ship. And now it's a question of, can he merge that alongside of Scotty? Because if we do that, all of a sudden you do have a 1-2 punch. And ideally that can create enough offense for the rest of the team to sort of fit in into their slots and hopefully advance in other areas. RJ, similarly, has been really good, much better than anyone anticipated when the trade was made. I think there was obviously great reason to be optimistic about RJ. Him coming home to Toronto is a great story. The fact that, you know, he was the number one recruit when he was going into college, the fact that he was the number three pick coming out of college after 1 year, you know, the fact that he's been a contributor towards a winning franchise in New York, those are all reasons to be positive. But I think he's improved on, and he's shown you, even in season, a recontextualized way that you can play RJ Barrett. He's averaging career highs as a Raptor in scoring at 20.6 points per game, at field goal percentage, at 55% field goal percentage, which coming into this, I think people would have been very happy to see him even 45 to 48%. That's where he traditionally was at, or even below. To see him jump to 55% has been amazing. The three-point percentage is 42%. Now, I have some doubts about that, but ultimately the results are what they are. He's shooting 42% from three. That's awesome. Free throws is down for sure, and he needs to figure that out, but he's also averaging a career high in rebounds as well. You're seeing a more efficient way with RJ, and I think that for him, it's about, okay, what he's already doing, the Raptors have done a good job of polishing and buffing that up. Can he contribute in other areas now? So you heard Darko talk about the playmaking. He wants him to average like 5, 6, 7 assists per game. I think he has the ability to do that because he touches the paint so often, and he has traditionally played as a point guard, at least in his teenage years. So hopefully there is that passing ability, but most importantly, he gets into the areas where he draws double teams, or at least he's in pressure points, and then you can release those with the assists. I think for me too, it's the defense. You know, I think for defensive impact, he's kind of neutral right now. And if he can get to a higher point, that will be something that the Raptors really need. Because when you look back at it, okay, the main guys are doing well. The record is not good, but they're injured. You understand where they are, their picks, whatever. But can you ultimately take three guys who are playing well and productive and turn that into wins? That's a different question. And to me, the biggest thing is they're not winning because they have just had a whole season of having no identity defensively. They actually started the season well defensively. That was the main reason they were winning games. Their offense was struggling. As the season has gone on, their offense has gotten better. They've changed their offensive personnel. That's created a better offense as well, too. But their defense has just gone downhill and downhill. Some stats on the season. Raptors 24th in defensive rating, which is really, really bad. But it gets even worse. Since December 1st, which is when the defensive slide started to take place, Raptors, since December 1st, and right now we are at March 11th, all right, the Raptors are 29th in defensive rating for the last 3 months of the season at 119.7. The only team worse than the Raptors in this stretch are the Detroit Pistons at 120.3. First off, a defensive rating of 120 is just absurd, but the fact is the Raptors have been literally the second worst defense in the league for the bulk of the season. And when you look at some of the things that Darko really stressed when he was brought in as a new head coach, was protect the rim, protect the corner threes, live with top of the floor threes. So nothing too inventive, but still structurally sound. Protect the rim, protect the corners. Have they done that? The answer kind of is no. Raptors, in terms of rim defense this year, allowed the six most attempts at the rim, and they're eighth in terms of the lowest percentage or the highest percentages that they allow at the rim. So they're not good at keeping people from getting to the paint. And then when they get to the paint, they don't do a good job of protecting the paint when they get to the paint. They are 27th in opponents' points in the paint since January 1st. The only teams worse are the Wizards, San Antonio, and the Pacers. And honestly, that's just not a group you want to be in defensively. In terms of corner threes, the Raptors allowed the eighth most corner threes just in general. And, you know, that's maybe more acceptable, I guess, than what they're doing defensively at the rim. But ultimately, those were the two stated goals. Protect the rims, protect the corner threes. Raptors have not done either of those two things. The only good thing the Raptors have done this year defensively, weirdly enough, is they concede very few free throws. They don't foul much. They don't gamble as much. So, you know, they don't actually allow the opponents to shoot that many free throws. But a lot of that is because they're so disengaged defensively because they have not been able to execute. They're not even in position to foul, which in that case is a little bit dark. So until this group finds a way to play defense, you are going to continue to see results like this, even with the younger guys back healthy and in the rotation. Right now, they're not even in the rotations and they're not healthy, so it's hard to evaluate. But ultimately, that's the goal next season. Get a defensive identity. And of course, that probably needs to come with a change of personnel as well. But speaking of personnel and the available personnel, time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. The line tonight, when the Raptors are in Denver, the line tonight is plus 14.5. They really expect Denver to just wash the Raptors. And honestly, when I read you the rotation once again of tonight's game, the expected lineup, as they would say in football, Kelly at 5, Ochai at 4, RJ at 3, Grady at 2, Javon Freeman Liberty at 1, with Jontay Porter, Jordan Wara, and Jalen McDaniels coming off the bench, you understand exactly why the line is what it is. I mean, as Katie said, hopefully they can keep it close. Hopefully they can be pesky. But the Raptors roster as is right now is in the most difficult position it's ever been since basically Tampa. And that was, you know, 4 years ago now. So it's tough tonight. You know, if you are enjoying this game and you watch this game, I salute to you. That's why we're all hardcore Raptor fans. But still, until they get more players back, they will continue to have inconsistent results. That's not breaking news. But that is Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. And that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe. Please rate and review the program. Thanks once again to producer Amit Mon, our board producer, Derek Brandale. Welcome back from last week. Jennifer Rolnick, David Siss, J.R. Matatide helping behind the scenes. Of course, thanks to our guest today as well, Katie Heindel. Again, go find her Substack, Basketball Feelings, and also David Thorpe. Go find his podcast and his Substack, both titled True Hoop. So that does it for us today. Appreciate everyone for listening, and I will look forward to recapping this game tonight and also tomorrow.